Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined today for a discussion of Man of Steel by Krypton's favorite son, Mark-On.
Happy summer, everybody. Happy summer.
We're going to be talking Man of Steel, the summer's biggest movie, question mark? This seems to be the one that everybody was looking forward to the most, I would say. I'm not positive it's going to make more money than, say, an Iron Man 3, but we'll call it the summer's biggest movie.
Yeah,
that way we'll
sure,
get
right
put
now.
On the poster, maybe.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, but remember, you can find our website at fthismovie.net. You should like us on Facebook if you don't already, and you should follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. Email us anytime you like at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Find us on DVD Verdict at dvdverdict.com and click the podcast tab. And while you're there, read one of the tens of thousands of DVD and Blu-ray reviews, the most comprehensive site on the internet. I don't have statistics to back that up, but I'm going to say it.
That's fine. It sounds like science.
And you can always find us in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie. I almost said you can find us in the F This Movie store, which we don't have yet.
We have enough.
Should we make an F This Movie store?
That's fine.
What would we sell? T-shirts, hats.
Babies.
Babies?
After sure.
This movie, babies? Tchotchkes?
Tchotchkes.
What about a baby named Tchotchke?
Sure.
Tchotchke, yeah. Bromley. Selling my baby. Little baby Tchotchke.
Right. He'll be wearing a lot of pins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's his movie pins.
Sure.
Or okay. Other pins.
Do
whatever.
We have pins, too?
We do have pins.
We need to sell the
there
pins.
There were some pins.
Okay.
Yeah, so we had a conversation last week on the podcast and in the comments about spoilers and how people want us to treat spoilers. It's still a work in progress because this movie just came out this weekend. I don't want to talk totally spoiler free the whole time. Totally spoiler full the whole time. So
sure,
we will spend a couple
course.
Minutes talking spoiler free just in case somebody hasn't seen the movie yet, wants to know what we thought of it before having it ruined for them. So, again, it's a work in progress. We don't know what we're going to do about spoilers, but thanks to everybody for providing your input, and we will continue to listen and do our best to make the show what other people want it to be.
Yeah, well, it's an important discussion, I think, to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, before we talk MOS, which is what the cool kids call it, Mark-On, have you seen anything good lately?
I have. I'll just talk about two specific movies.
All right.
Pretty recently, I went to go see Mud with Matthew McConaughey. I
think now you saw. Okay, I'm sorry. Just to clarify, you saw the movie Mud.
Yes.
And you were with Matthew McConaughey.
No, no.
He was like, "That's me on screen." All
right. Right.
I look pretty good.
Yeah, he's in Mud.
Got it.
He's not Mud, but he's in. Okay, that's very. It's complicated. We went to go see Mud, which is
starring
Matthew McConaughey.
Got it.
And his chest. And he and his bare torso. Although there's a lot less bare torso in this movie than, I guess, I suppose, in opposition to other Matthew McConaughey movies. Sorry, everybody. I think it's still in theaters in some places.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of toward the end of its theatrical run around this area. What should I say? I don't want to spoil it too much, obviously.
Sure.
So people can go see it. I generally liked it.
Okay.
It's set in the South, and then he's a guy who's... Matthew McConaughey plays a guy who's in trouble, and then some other people...
Would you call him, like, a lawbreaker?
No, he's not a lawbreaker.
He's not?
No, he's not a lawbreaker. He could be a lawbreaker. All you right. Don't know. You should go watch the movie.
Does he maybe, like, see a lot of lawbreakers in here tonight?
there might be some...
I see a lot of lawbreakers in here.
There might be some lawbreakers after him.
Oh, okay, got it.
Right. There's also two little boys involved, and so I don't want to call them lawbreakers.
Sure.
So it's like a smaller movie in terms of probably budget, but also in scope. It's not like a huge cast of characters, but I think it's definitely worth checking out for people who want to look for something a little bit smaller.
I heard it compared to like Huckleberry Finn a lot, or Tom Sawyer.
Sure.
Like old school Mark Twain.
I think that makes sense just because the story actually doesn't really necessarily focus. McConaughey is obviously the big name, but I think the story really focuses on the two boys.
Okay.
And they're on a river, and so some of the Mark Twain stuff kind of...
So simplistic people are like, two boys, river, that's Mark Twain.
Right. I mean, well, not necessarily, but yeah. I mean, there is that sort of thinking of like, oh, hey, an orange and a basketball are the same thing. They're both round and they're the same color, right? So that means this and...
I eat both of them. Now, that filmmaker also made Take Shelter, which I haven't seen.
I haven't either. I really wanted to, but I heard
it seems like I'm avoiding all this guy's work, and that's not the case.
Right, I'm sorry.
I just haven't seen it yet.
Sorry, Jeff Nichols.
Yeah, Jeff Nichols, that's his name. Thank you.
But I really liked this one. I think it's worth checking out.
All right.
People were looking for a little bit of different programming over the summer instead of this big stuff.
Something in which entire cities are not laid to waste.
Yes, things that don't involve aliens from other planets. Although one could make the argument for Matthew McConaughey being not from this world.
Yeah.
He's from Texas, so.
Anything besides mud?
Yeah, the one other movie I want to talk about is Holy Motors, which we talked about a little bit outside of the podcast. I'd heard about it last year just from people sort of, when people are doing their sort of 2012 wrap-ups. It was a movie that I kept on hearing about, but I didn't know anything about.
A lot of people kind of lost their mind for it.
Yeah, and it's different. It's kind of different. I saw it on Netflix streaming. It's for those of you who have it, so it's on there. Decided to watch it, and it was, I don't know. I got a phone call in the middle of watching it, and it was my girlfriend, and she said, "Hey, what are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'm watching this movie." And she says, "Oh, well, what's the movie, and how is it?" I said, "Well, it's Holy Motors, and it's a weird French movie." And she asked a very logical question. She
said, "What's it about?"
She said, and I said, "It's weird. It's French, and it's weird."
Yeah.
And she said, "Well, why are you still watching it then?" Mm. And I said, "Well, it's not bad.
Right.
It's just weird, and it's very..." Which I think is the best way to say it. I think I wanted to, at least. I don't know about anybody else. I wanted to keep on watching it to try to, like, figure out what's going on. Like, how is this all going to sort of add up to the end? I feel like I should talk a little bit about it so people have some sort of clue what it is. It's, without giving anything away, it's more vignettes. It's more, like, small pieces. And I think what I found really compelling was to try to figure out how these, like, chunks of the story, like, fit together. Because they're very different. And there's one character, there's one part that is a through line all the way through. But at the end, you know, it just sort of ends in a, and I'm left thinking, what was this about? Was there a... Because I can sort of feel like there's, oh, it could be saying this about... It could be this kind of criticism about people. It could be this comment or commentary about how, like, movies are maybe analogous to life experience or something, but those are all theoretical. Like, I think all, like, any number of theories could be supported by watching this movie.
Right.
It's really beautiful to look at. That's not hard to argue. It's really beautiful to look at.
That's good.
There's a really, the main, I forgot the actor's name, but the actor who plays the main character does a great job because he has to play lots of different parts and he's incredible in it. There's chimpanzees.
All right.
Okay.
You've sold me. I wasn't with it until you brought up the monkeys.
Right.
I started watching it. I have a hard time. Like, I will rarely bail on a movie 100%. Like, your girlfriend asking you, like, why are you still watching it? Because even if I don't like a movie, I feel like I need to see it through to the end, A, because who knows, maybe something will happen at the end that puts the whole thing into perspective, and then all of a sudden I like it. Or also, like, I don't feel like I can have an opinion on a movie unless I've seen the whole thing.
Right.
I don't understand these people who are like, that movie sucks, I only watched 10 minutes. It's like, well, then you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
Maybe you didn't like those 10 minutes, whatever. So, Holy Motors, I started watching and then realized, I'm not in the mood to be watching this right now, and that wasn't fair to the movie. So I did bail on it. I have every intention of returning to it.
Yeah.
Now that you brought up the chimpanzees, it's a foregone conclusion that I'm going to.
It's
going to
be chimpanzees.
Return to it. Have you watched Upstream Color yet?
No, that's next on my list.
Yeah, it's on Netflix now.
Yeah,
and I think you'll like it.
Okay, nice.
I do.
I'm excited.
But that's another one that, like, has a number of interpretations that I think any of which the movie supports.
Cool, cool.
But not weird for its own sake.
Okay. But no, definitely Holy Motors for those of you who are maybe, like, in Patrick's position. I think it's worth checking out.
Yeah.
Just give it a try. Maybe you won't make it all the way through or whatever, but
right.
I think it's worth watching.
Again, Netflix Instant also makes everything sort of risk-free. It's like you watch something, and if you are somebody who will say, like, after 15 minutes, you're like, I'm not into this, you can turn it off, fine, you don't ever have to finish it. Or even if you watch it and you don't like it, it's like, you haven't lost anything. You've lost 2 hours, but you've seen a movie.
Right.
And it's not like the old days where you would rent something and you feel like, oh, man, what a waste of $4 or whatever, you know? Like, Netflix, man. It's risk-free.
$4.
Forget it. I am still just swallowed up in Junesploitation.
Junesploitation.
You guys aren't aware. It's our month-long celebration of exploitation movies. If you go to fthismovie.net, there's a Junesploitation tab at the top of the page. You can click and see all the past days. We're about halfway through now. You can see the rules, and not that there's rules, but everybody's just watching exploitation movies every day, and it's fun. So I've been watching a movie every day, which can be a challenge, and then I'm also trying to work in, like, some non-exploitation stuff to have stuff to talk about on the podcast, and it can be a challenge. So I'll talk about two movies quickly. One, I finally saw from beginning to end a movie called Crime Wave from 1985, I think.
Okay.
And this, for a long time, was one of these kind of holy grail movies because it was never released on DVD. Mm-hmm. It was on VHS, like, back in the day, but it's a Sam Raimi movie. Sam Raimi made this movie after Evil Dead. So Evil Dead is sort of a modest, independent hit. A studio comes calling, says, what do you want to do next? Sam Raimi directs. Joel and Ethan Coen write the screenplay.
Wow.
Right. So for years, yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, a movie directed by Sam Raimi and written by the Coen brothers. I have to see this. But the deal is, Sam Raimi has basically disowned the movie because it was taken away from him by the studio. They re-edited it. They added a different score. Like, it was a horrible experience for him. He wants nothing to do with the movie. And I saw the movie, and yeah, I get it. It's not good. Sure. There's flashes of, like, I could see how he made this movie. I could see how the Coens wrote this movie. None of it works. He wanted to cast Bruce Campbell. The studio wouldn't let him. The guy they did cast is just kind of a wet noodle.
Those are my favorite kinds of noodles.
None of it. I find the dry ones too crunchy.
Sure. Yeah.
None of it really works, but Shout Factory has put together a Blu-ray of the movie to sort of restore, not its reputation, but just there's a bunch of bonus features and stuff where they kind of talk about what went wrong, and that's interesting. So I'm glad to have finally seen it, because I've seen parts of it. Anytime I saw that, like, HBO was going to show it, I would try and make it a point to see it because I didn't know when else I could. And I had only seen pieces of it because it never grabbed me, and with good reason. It's not very good.
Yeah. Raimi's PlayStation.
Yeah. And the other movie I saw finally was Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, which came out in January, and I wanted to see, and I never did.
One of my favorite parts of this segment that we do on the show every time is that every time you say something that just makes me react the way that I just did, I just start laughing. Not necessarily for joy. But
I wanted to see the movie, and I didn't, and Adam Riske actually has been sort of championing it all year, saying, like, I'm not sure why people were so hard on this movie. And it was exactly the movie I wanted it to be. Like, the title tells you everything.
Okay.
And there's almost no plot. There's very little characterization. It's literally just Jeremy Renner and Gemma Arterton, your favorite.
She's my favorite.
She's the best. As grown-up Hansel and Gretel murdering witches in incredibly gory detail.
Nice.
And Adam Riske had pointed out, like, it feels a lot like sort of a Sam Raimi movie from the 80s. And that's exactly right. That's what it feels like. It has that kind of weird energy and sense of humor. And it's very violent, but again, not in, like, a depressing way, in, like, a fun way.
It's like, we're slaughtering witches.
Right. Fine. If you're somebody who likes those kinds of splatstick movies, I think there's a lot of fun to be had. The reviews were harsh, and I don't know what people wanted from that movie.
Sure,
like,
right.
To me, that
Shakespeare.
Yeah, that movie delivered exactly what it said it was going to deliver.
That's true.
So I actually had a lot of fun with it, and I would recommend it.
Okay.
I guess we got to talk about Man of Steel now, right?
I guess we MOS.
Let's talk
about MOS.
MOS, Zack Snyder's attempt to... Visionary director Zack Snyder's attempt to relaunch the Superman franchise, which has been dormant since, 2006,
think. Oh, has it been that long?
It's fascinating to me because when Amazing Spider-Man came out last year, all these people were like, what the hell? Why are they already rebooting Spider-Man? We just had Spider-Man. Nobody said that about Man of Steel, even though we just had a Superman movie in 2006. But a lot of people maybe didn't love Bryan Singer's Superman Returns, and now, so we have Christopher Nolan on board to try and work the same magic that he did with the Batman franchise as producer and sort of overseer Zack Snyder directs. Man of Steel. Mark on your thoughts. Sure.
I liked it.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
Okay, bye, guys. I gotta go get a sandwich. I got some law breaking to do. I really liked it. I remember I just saw it yesterday, so I think it's been, for both of us, it's been less than 24 hours since watching this movie. I think, and we can get more into this later in the podcast, but people didn't like that Bryan Singer movie, or it feels like people kind of didn't like it.
I would agree with that.
And
even though it made a bunch of, Matt Singer just last week wrote an article like, when did everybody stop liking Superman Returns? Because yeah, actually when it came out, it was popular and well-liked. The reviews were good. It made more money than Batman Begins.
Yeah, it made a ton of money. Yeah. But people were like, apparently disappointed that it, or the studio or whatever was disappointed that it didn't make more. I was like, that's still a lot that you made. I don't know, I'm just saying. And I remember watching that one as well and liking it too. And so this one, I was like, okay, well. But I think part of just speaking to the excitement around this movie, I think it was the visionary director, Zack Snyder. And then Christopher Nolan being on board made it seem like, well, I don't care that there was one not too long ago. I definitely want to see this one for sure.
Yeah.
I know that was my sort of build up to it. I think I was skeptical in watching the trailers and thinking like, well, this is going to be any good. I don't know. And then I kept on watching a couple of the trailers because I couldn't help myself because whatever. Anyway, that's another part for that spoiler discussion, right? Like the role of trailers and spoilers. Anyway, but watching more of the trailers, and I remember connecting with you in the conversation, just thinking like, oh man, that looks really good.
Yeah.
It just keeps on looking better. And so, anyway, I liked it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was a little bit different in, I don't know if in tone or in feel or maybe the look than I sort of expected a little bit. There's still some things that I wasn't super thrilled about, but I think generally I enjoyed watching it. I don't know. What'd you think?
Once again, we get to play a round of Patrick is the asshole because
oh, you're not an asshole.
I didn't love the movie, and I wanted to. I was excited about it. I thought the trailers looked great. I like superhero movies, although I will fully admit I'm way burned out on superhero movies.
Yeah.
Like, we got to figure out something else or start taking them in new directions or something. I'm a Zack Snyder fan.
Mm-hmm.
That was one area where I differed from a lot of the people who were excited, because a lot of people were like, they couldn't wait to see it, with the caveat that, like, Zack Snyder better not mess it up. And I feel like I've enjoyed most of his movies, and so him directing was actually a selling point to me.
Yeah, me too.
I was very excited about it. There are things about it that I liked.
Yeah.
There are some performances that I enjoyed. There's a couple moments that I thought were really good. I can see some of the things that they were trying to do that I think are interesting. I think it's different from other Superman movies, and that's to me where it differs from that Amazing Spider-Man sort of conundrum where not only did we just have one, but they kind of made a pretty similar movie, I feel like, minus some of Sam Raimi's personality. In this movie, it doesn't feel like the Bryan Singer movie or the Richard Donner movie. This feels very much like its own Superman movie.
Sure.
Which is cool. Having said that, I would say on the whole, for me, it didn't work as a movie, which is a bummer.
I think both of our reactions put together is pretty accurate for
perhaps
what people are pretty much saying about it.
Well, I've seen people mixed, lose their minds over it.
Sure.
Including some critics that I read and respect. Others I feel are too harsh on it.
Sure.
Doug was reading me a Facebook comment from somebody who he knows who said Warner Brothers ought to be ashamed of themselves.
Oh.
That might be taking it a little far.
That's a little harsh.
He also kept repeating the phrase super meh, which is like, boy, you were happy when you came up with that one, you clever girl. I'm not, I'm certainly not at one polar extreme or the other.
Sure.
I'm definitely more in the middle, but I feel like it just didn't come together for me as a movie. Having said that, if you are not interested in having any aspects of Superman Returns, I almost said, Man of Steel spoiled for you, go ahead and tune out now that you've heard that one of us pretty much liked it and one of us pretty much didn't. Because now we'll talk specifics and I guess this is the spoiler section. Whatever. Okay, go ahead.
What should we talk about first?
All right, I got something.
All right, go.
Here's maybe my overall problem with the movie. I liked how much of it dealt with this idea of Superman as an alien. It really kind of doubles down in the first couple minutes of all the stuff on Krypton, and I wasn't loving Russell Crowe's performance, but
sure.
Krypton just looked so cool and was so busy, and the scope of the movie, I mean, it really seems like Zack Snyder sat down and said, like, there's a few things I want to accomplish with a Superman movie. I want scope and scale, and I want to show that he's an alien. Right. And I feel like this movie does deliver those things.
Sure.
I feel like it loses out a lot of other things that I wish it would have had. You know, the Christopher Reeve Superman, the Richard Donner Superman, is an alien, but he's more of just sort of this square, good guy. Right. And I love that movie. I'm not bashing that movie, but the way that Christopher Reeve played Superman was basically a human who's, like, the best. He's right. just, like, super nice and decent, and he stands for truth, justice, and the American way. And this movie isn't about that. This movie is very much about Superman as the other. And I actually think, while Henry Cavill doesn't have a lot to do, I don't think, I feel like there were a lot of moments where he did actually do a good job of embodying that. He had this look on his face sometimes. It was sort of this half smile. It wasn't dismissive, but it was very much like puny Earthlings. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
sure.
And I liked that because it did make him feel like an observer. As somebody who is very different. But here's my big issue with Man of Steel. I'm a big fan of movies that focus on character mm-hmm. over plot.
Sure.
And that was one of my problems with, like, Star Trek Into Darkness, was that movie is very much about plot, not about character. Man of Steel, I feel, is way more interested in Superman's abilities than it is in Superman's character.
Sure.
So much of the movie is spent showing us what he can do mm-hmm. as opposed to who he is.
Mm-hmm.
It tries to address some of those issues where he feels alone. And obviously by the time we get to the end, he, you know, there's this realization that he's the last of his right. people. Because he's just dispatched of the other last, like there were two right. and now you just got rid of the other guy. So now it's just you. And there's some sadness there, and I thought that was interesting. There's these interesting ideas that sneak in halfway throughout the movie.
Yeah.
But so much of the movie, again, Zack Snyder seems to have sat down and said, we've never had a Superman where we really see, like, what happens when gods fight.
Right.
And so this movie is very concerned with showing flashbacks of what he could do as a child, and then in present day, showing that he flies, and he has heat vision, and super hearing, and x-ray vision, and when he punches, buildings crumble, and cities are leveled.
Yeah.
And the last hour of this movie, to me, felt numbing, and repetitive, and I just feel like it would have been so much more effective. It didn't feel like anybody sat down and tried to choose their moments.
Sure.
And that's one of those things. I don't mean to keep comparing Man of Steel to other movies, because I'm not saying it's not good because it doesn't do this thing that this other movie did. But sometimes the best way to illustrate what I'm talking about is to point to other things.
Sure.
The Avengers has a last half hour, 45 minutes. That's all the big fight scene as well, and levels a city just like this movie does, and could fall, you know, to some of the same criticisms. But the Avengers to me was really good at picking moments.
Mm-hmm.
And having these things that you could point to, whether they were emotional peaks or just action sequences that the movie stopped to take time to show and then would move back into whatever else. This is just a constant barrage of CGI mayhem.
Of things being thrown around.
Nonstop.
Yeah.
And it, to me, it means nothing.
Yeah. I just wanted to do a couple things.
All right,
I think one of the things I agree with you on definitely is I felt the fight at the end, because this is what JB talks about all the time with the Van Helsing thing,
where
you have two supercharged beings punching each other, not really, and because they're super beings, they don't sustain any damage, and so you don't know which ironically, takes away from how powerful you're trying to show them to be. So it's like, oh, well, Zod's really strong, Superman's really strong, and then they both punch each other, and then you don't really see anything happening, and they're both still whole and complete and in one piece.
And the only people to feel the effects of it are the normal citizens who are dying as the city crumbles around them.
Right.
And the movie kind of loses focus of that, but it's really concentrating on the fight between Superman and Zod. It's like watching a Godzilla movie told from Godzilla's perspective. Sure, it's like, sure. No, you tell it from the perspective of the people who are watching what's happening. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's fine. No, and it's like the similar thing that we talked about with Star Trek Into Darkness, where it's the ship like flies through San Francisco, and it's like, thousands of people are dying! Right. Why? What did Superman care?
Right.
Or that is just part of it. In addition to that, it reminded me of listening to the commentary on the Matrix movies, where the last one where it's Agent Smith against Neo, and they're both flying through the air, like, whatever. They're both, and for all intents and purposes, they're both Supermen. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing, you know, they were talking about in the commentary. They were like, well, for this sequence, we tried to figure out, like, how would two superhuman beings, like, fight each other? Like, how would they, you know, whatever. And it just felt like it was just the same. It just occurred to me that, like, well, maybe that we just haven't figured that out yet either. Like, we just don't know how to show, aside from buildings being smashed and things being thrown all over the place. Like, it's just hard to show two characters that are so powerful fighting each other and, like, that there's any stakes or anything. Right. So I totally agree with you on that one. I think I thought about the characterization question. I think a lot of the casting I really liked. I liked Amy Adams. I liked Henry Cavill, and I'm secure in my manhood to be able to say this. Henry Cavill is a strikingly handsome man.
He is handsome, but he's so large from the waist up that I thought at times he was going to tip over. He's so just like built.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he looks great
as
Superman, and I wish he would have had more of a character to play.
Right.
What he has, I like what he did with.
Right.
He's not my problem with the movie.
Yeah. I was okay with Russell Crowe. I liked Michael Shannon, because Michael Shannon does his Michael Shannon thing. I think there's parts in the movie, and this isn't necessarily true for everybody, but like I like it when Michael Shannon does his like high-pitched, loud Michael Shannon voice, and then I get excited.
I will find him!
Right, that's great.
I like Michael Shannon as an actor. I thought they did some interesting things with the General Zod character in that he does have a motivation, and it's sort of one that, while you don't agree with his methods, you can say, well, I understand where he's coming from.
Yeah.
And part of the problem is, A, this is a movie that's big on tell, don't show, because David Goyer is not a terrific writer, and I feel like most of the movie's problems, aside from the decision to make the whole last hour a nonstop, ridiculous fight scene, most of this movie's problems, I think, come down to screenplay problems.
Sure.
So I like Zod's motivation. However, it's unfortunate that like he basically explains it all in a speech near the end of the movie. Right. Nobody in this movie is allowed to just sort of imply what they're thinking or what their motivations are. Everyone comes out and says directly.
Yeah.
But I like Michael Shannon. I didn't think he was bad in the part, but he didn't do anything for me as General Zod, which surprised me. I found myself liking his villain performance better from Premium Rush. And that's not a movie anyone should remember.
Right.
But to me, he was more of a standout in that movie than he was in this movie. And you know, that's probably too much pressure because we want everybody to be Heath Ledger. We want every villain to be, oh, you have to be the greatest villain. And I don't think he didn't detract from the movie.
Right.
He just didn't add as much as I maybe thought he would, because he's Michael Shannon.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of those. It's not that those character notes that we wanted or that I wanted weren't there. It's just there wasn't enough of it. I like seeing some of, because, you know, obviously this movie in particular has, you know, this whole other, like, four, is it five other Superman movies now? I don't remember exactly.
There are five.
So there's five other ones that they have to sort of go up against a little bit, and so they gotta, like, figure out, okay, how are we gonna put something into people I haven't seen before?
Yeah.
I like that the things that they showed him in, like, junior high, a little bit young. I was like, that's cool, that's fun, I like that. I like that they showed him in this really in-between state, like, before he decides to go work for the Daily Planet. I like that, because you don't get to see a lot of that, and we especially haven't seen that in movies. but it just felt like there wasn't enough. There's a line later in the movie where, I forget exactly where, but it's a moment where Superman says to Lois Lane, like, thanks for believing in me. And I felt like that line wasn't
earned.
Like, no, not at all. It didn't make any sense. Like, how did she believe in you? She just investigated you.
Lois Lane is a problem in this movie. And that breaks my heart to say it, because I thought Amy Adams was really good in the part.
Yeah.
I thought the way that they introduced her was actually really good. It's like, wow, she's strong and capable and smart. They, of course, have to once again spell out, like, I won the Pulitzer Prize. Like, okay, sure, you right, could yeah. just have one on her desk or something, you know.
Right.
So there's, again, a lot of tell, don't show. I really liked her performance, and I liked her scenes with Henry Cavill. I liked the two of them together. However, it makes a lot of leaps that it doesn't earn.
Right.
In terms of their relationship and their chemistry, I have no idea at what point they fell in love.
Where did that? Yeah.
It jumps around where he's suddenly in the cemetery and then he's gone. She is very much this plot device that's thrown in as needed. And so she gets on the ship and then she talks to Jor-El so he can explain things. And then they look into her mind and they reveal the secrets of Superman, but then Jor-El makes her know how to defeat them just right. as a shortcut. And then sometimes she needs to be saved at just the right time. And then other times she's very capable and doesn't need saving. And I found that very frustrating.
Yeah.
However, having said that, it's the two of them that share my two favorite moments in the movie. One is the last exchange in the movie, which I think was maybe my favorite part, where she says, welcome to the planet.
Right.
So great.
Yeah.
And I would have loved to have seen more Clark Kent, but I don't feel like the movie is lesser for it. I understand.
Sure.
Although when it ended, I was like, so this is Clark Kent Begins? so it's Clark Kent's origin story. But I didn't feel like the movie was lesser for it, because again, this movie was more concerned with Superman as alien,
right.
which going all the way back to the Tim Burton Superman, that was what he said he was going to focus on. And I remember thinking, oh, that sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. And of course that would have been just a lot of like moping and Danny Elfman's sad right. lament music. And yeah. this movie doesn't do that. So they took that approach.
A lot of Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah. Right. Right. Looking sure. all gothed out.
Like, what are you doing? Smoking a cigarette. Right.
as Lois Lane.
As Marla.
Yeah, basically. So that was one of my favorite exchanges, was that. And then there's a scene, they have a few exchanges where they're like right in the middle of a field or a desert. It keeps yeah, happening yeah, where right. they're just in the center of this vast empty frame. He's about to take off and he says, you should back up. And she does. And then he kind of smiles and says, you should back up a little bit further.
right.
And it was just, it was... They both played it well because she kind of smiles because she's sort of, you know, she has a crush on him and she's a little bit embarrassed and she's amazed at his abilities and he kind of knows that. And it's this great little moment. And it was like, it wasn't funny, but it was one of the only moments of levity
right.
in the entire movie.
Yes.
And that may have played into my reaction to the movie, is that it's pretty humorless.
Yeah, it's not lighthearted. Not at all.
Which isn't to say that it's the dark, gritty thing that we all feared from sort of the first trailer and
sure.
your creeping Nolanism
yeah.
expression, where everybody said, like, oh, they're turning Superman into the Dark Knight, and you can't do that because it's not the same.
Right.
I don't feel like they did that.
Yeah.
I feel like they found a tone that was different. At the same time, it's humorless.
Yeah.
And I felt like it could have used a little bit more
sure.
levity.
I think, speaking of just the levity part, I think that's why that line with the army,
at the end,
I think he's, yeah. that got a lot of laughs.
It got a huge laugh, and it's yeah. in all the trailers,
yeah.
and it's kind of a corny line, but it got a huge laugh for exactly the reason you're saying.
Right,
it was waiting. It was this big gulp in the desert. It's like, oh, a joke, thank God.
I think also, along with just, I think Snyder and Nolan, and they're in each of their movies separately, I think we've encountered that they use characters not necessarily as characters. They just use characters as, like, plot engines just to
yeah.
go forward.
Yeah.
Or as, like, ciphers or as memes for, like, something else. And so I think that was... I think they did try to, like, add some character things. But then it just wasn't enough, you know? Right. Like, I know that this idea of Superman as the other or as an alien is primarily what this is about, but there still is, you know, he's talking about his relationship to the people of planet Earth, and I'm like, you don't see the people of planet Earth ever. You know, there is no connection. There's not even, like, a developing connection. It's like, there is no connection.
And you don't ever really see, again, because the movie is so big on tell, don't show, it's a lot of people saying, you're going to be great, and you're going to inspire these people to want to achieve more, and you're going to become a symbol. And all these characters just keep telling Superman all these things, or I guess Cal, all these qualities about himself, about his destiny, about what's going to happen, but we never really... There's never any visual proof of that. Yeah. This last week, I read a quote. The great film crit Hulk wrote a whole article. He's incredible, and he wrote this whole article about modern day blockbuster story construction. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember if this was I believe this was in the body of the article, as opposed to in the comments below. But it was this quote from someone that said, don't impress me, convince me. And I feel that a lot of Man of Steel was really concerned with impressing us and not with convincing us. Right. It was very impressive, the scale of it. It's a very well-shot film. It's very beautiful.
Yeah.
Hans Zimmer's score is great. I really liked the score.
I really liked it too.
But there's something almost depressing about how far we've come in our... sort of populist entertainment. When you think back to the Richard Donner Superman, and it had John Williams' heroic theme that every kid could just run around and sing, and that meant that they were Superman, and it got stuck in all of our heads, and it stood for something. And now it's just this series of percussion, just da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
That's the whole score, where it's more about pummeling us than it is about sort of inspiring us. And I know that's... maybe being overly critical, because, I enjoyed the score for what it was, but it's endemic of, I feel like, a larger issue that's going on.
For sure. Well, I think that kind of goes along. I had the thought that, and I think part of this was that the movie spent a lot more time on Krypton than I had anticipated.
Sure.
It's a lot of time. Also, all the Krypton tech was awesome.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool looking. The one sequence where... where Kal-El is back on the ship, and then he runs into his father's, like, the hologram, whatever that thing is. And then his dad, like, tells him back all the... And it's, like, that molten, that liquid metal animation. Yeah. That was incredible. I was like, that looks awesome.
That was neat.
Yeah. But,
that was visual storytelling.
Yes, it was.
Which the movie didn't have enough of.
Right. But it also made me think, because of all these moments, that this movie felt a lot more like a science fiction movie than it did like a superhero movie or like a...
Which I could be down with. I mean, definitely. Although, again, some of the more sort of sci-fi elephants?
Elephants.
You know, sci-fi elephants.
They've got lasers.
These sci-fi elements felt like... bad screenwriting construction. This whole idea of the Codex as being the MacGuffin in the movie just felt so lazy. And the thing I kept thinking of was the glasses from, was it the first Transformers or the second? One of the Transformers, trying to retrieve this pair of eyeglasses from eBay or something. It's the worst MacGuffin ever, but that's what I kept thinking of. You have this movie about these superhuman gods who've come to Earth from outer space, and they're chasing each other around for the Codex, and I just felt that was lazy. And then near the end, Zod says something like, start the world engine or something. It's just these things that sort of get laughs because they are shortcuts to better storytelling, unfortunately. And David Goyer is kind of famous for that. He gets to write all these comic book movies because he's written other comic book movies, but rarely has anyone come out of one of these and said, like, boy, that script was something. I mean, nobody...
Blade Trinity was great.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, nobody even... And he had his hand in co-writing, I think, all of Nolan's Batman movies. Maybe not Dark Knight Rises, but I know he helped write Batman Begins, and I'm pretty sure
he did Rises too.
Co-wrote, did he?
I don't know if it was co-writing, but he had a credit in there.
Okay, he's got a credit on Dark Knight, and nobody came out of Dark Knight saying, great screenplay.
Right.
That movie works in spite of its screenplay, not because of it, you know. And this movie, unfortunately, doesn't conquer that. And some of it is in its construction as well. I liked the flashes back to Smallville. I felt like the way that it was done, sort of out of chronology, felt like Christopher Nolan just sort of saying, like, well, here's what I do.
Right.
Just tell it out of order. And then they kind of did it. And it doesn't always work for the reason that Jonathan Kent, played by Kevin Costner, who's one of my favorite things about the whole movie, I actually thought he was great.
Yeah.
And the movie could have used – he was this movie's Martin Sheen. Like, everybody came out of Amazing Spider-Man saying – movie's not good, but Martin Sheen is Uncle Ben.
Right.
That was great. I felt like Kevin Costner was really good. The movie could have used more of him. His last scene, what was your... Not his last scene, because he shows up actually two more times after his quote-unquote last scene. But the way that his death is handled, what did you think of that?
I actually... When I was... As I was watching it, and I'm glad you brought up the Kents, because I wanted to talk about that too.
Yeah.
I think that that's a sore spot in terms of, like, the lack of characterization, I think really comes up in the fact how they depict the Kents. Because I felt, okay, again, I understand. Superman is an alien. He's not from here, whatever. But I didn't read a ton of the Superman comics, but, like, what I really liked about Superman is that he is not from here, but then he... It's, like, two really, like, down-to-earth, like, good people took him in and then taught him how to be a human being and whatever. And there's something... And, like... The characterization of the Kents is that they're these simple, just very humble farming people, and they're the ones who, you know, whatever. And so there's something about those characters that I really liked and, like, the role that they play all the time. And so, but I didn't necessarily like Costner, or the, I didn't like the character of, like, that he was trying to prevent Superman from being Superman. I didn't know how I felt about it as the story went along. I was like, I don't know how I feel about that. But I actually, I liked... The moment where he, I got a little chill a little bit when he tells him, like, no, don't do it. And I loved, because I feel like that self, that sacrificial moment was exactly in line with the ethos of, like, what the Kents are. Like, they sacrificed for, to protect their kid. And so I thought it was in line with that, which is why I liked it.
Yeah, I liked that moment. It, for me, it got a little bit ruined by the next moment where he's swept up in a tornado, where he's there 1 second and then he's gone, like he's Obi-Wan Kenobi or something. It's just the way that the actual execution of that effect, I don't think, worked. But yeah, the actual holding his hand out. But that was one of the only moments where I felt like the comic book fan in me sat up a little bit and said, oh, wait, because while I do think, you know, they kind of retcon that moment... And I do think they made it work because of the beat that you're talking about where he says, no, wait, hold on. But one of the things that was always so moving about Jonathan Kent's fate is that he has this heart attack and dies.
Yeah.
And that that's something that for all of Superman's power, he can't he can't stop that. He's powerless against that. That the people that you are around you, that you love, are going to get older and die, and that you can't stop that.
Sure.
To me, that was always such a strength of that relationship, and to have that taken away, I felt like, I won't say it hurt the movie, but I missed it, even though I think what they replaced it with is okay.
Right.
I then, but then I had a little bit of a problem when he shows up again later in another flashback to an earlier time. I just felt like if you're going to take him out of the movie... Take him out at that point.
Yeah.
Don't show him again later on in a different place. And I'm not talking about the one at the end where he sees the kid running around
with a cape
in the cape, which is fine, although who's the kid pretending to be?
Right.
If there's no Superman.
I don't know.
Who are there other superheroes that we're not aware of?
Maybe he genetically predisposed. Is it Shazam? Is that what we're thinking about?
But whatever. It's fine because it makes for a neat image. But there's another flashback in, that's sandwiched between those two where... Young Clark is getting picked on, and his dad sees him and comes over and says, you know, you can't hit him. I almost wanted you to, but you can't. And that's a fine scene, but it's problematic, A, because it comes after he has died, and that needed to be his exit from the movie. And two, we've sort of already seen that beat in the diner. If you're going to do it, that has to come before the diner scene where Superman then is faced with making the choice not to fight. If that makes sense.
Sure.
I just felt like it was a little bit redundant, maybe?
No, it makes sense.
and kind of ineffective. And a lot of that early stuff with Clark showing up in the right place at the right time. I mean, the way he finds out his fate, he's in Alaska. He happens to be where they find the ship.
He listens to the news or something.
Right. And then he's the ship happens to be there and he gets on. And then Lois
Lane takes a picture, a photograph at night, and she zooms in on the exact part where he's walking and she's like, oh, what are you doing up there?
It's all just sort of lazily constructed. It's all just, it's sort of convenience and let's get these characters where we need them.
Right.
To be, and none of that, you know, is necessarily enough to ruin a movie, but when you add enough of it together, it's that thing where you can't necessarily describe it, but you're watching a movie and you just, your gut tells you something doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
The dots aren't being connected in the way that they need to be connected for these relationships and these choices to make sense.
Yeah. And I think if they worked on the Jonathan Kent or the Martha Kent stuff a little bit more, by the way, Martha Kent, Diane Lane. Diane Lane's like on this old makeup. Yeah. Diane Lane's still hot. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they'd worked on that more, or if there was more for her to do, or if there was more for more of a presence of the Kents, I feel like that would have, that just would have helped the movie in terms of like his connection to humankind. Cause I feel like that's like what he always like channels it through, right? He thinks about his parents and it's like, well, I was raised like that's whatever his connection to humankind is, and not like, not Lois Lane, which is why that whole line of like, thanks for believing in me doesn't make any sense.
Right.
It's like, you don't even know her.
Right.
But he does know his parents and he does know the people that he grew up in. He does know the community that he grew up in. I felt like if there was more of that, then it would have sort of made more sense. Like, I really hated it at the end where he's got Zod in the headlock or whatever, and he's refusing to back down. And he's like, no, I'm never going to give up. And he's, like, shooting the heat ray vision at the, like, random crowd of people who are cowering in fear. And then, you know, Superman snaps his neck, whatever. And then you go back, and then the people are not there. They've disappeared from the scene.
Yeah.
I'm like, and that, not that you should have done this or should have done that or, like, I'm not saying that those people should have stayed and, like, thanked Superman or something, but just, it was weird that they just immediately were gone. Like, all of a sudden, the train station that they were fighting inside of was completely empty.
Because you need that beat where the people of Earth thank him, sort of.
Yeah, somehow. For that scene some way.
And again, that, I wasn't crazy about that scene, the way that it resolves between him and Zod, and not just because Superman kills someone, because the whole deal with Superman is he doesn't kill.
Right.
Watching them fight, I just kept thinking, the only way this is going to end is because Superman is more powerful, right? Like, at some point, he's just going to be the better fighter or throw the harder punch. And that's not interesting to me.
Yeah.
The way that Superman needs to defeat Zod is by showing something. The thing that makes him special, the thing that makes him different from Zod.
Right.
Whether it's his humanity or, you know what I mean?
Right.
Something that he's learned from people of Earth, something that makes him Superman as opposed to just Kal-El from Krypton fighting General Zod from Krypton.
Right.
And the movie doesn't really give us that. It's basically just two Kryptonians fighting. I will say it was interesting, again, the way that it's handled where he immediately sort of regrets, A, having to kill, and B, killing the last of his kind.
Sure.
I thought that was interesting and sort of made up for what I felt like was a mistake. So it's not like the moment totally didn't work for me, but I agreed with you 100% that we needed to see that family there who had been saved.
Like incredulous at what had happened.
Right.
Whatever.
Something, because Superman at the same time, and I do give credit to the movie for showing the hero feel remorse for killing the villain, not just because he doesn't want to kill, but because it means something greater. That's interesting. We don't always get that. Usually it's like, yay, the bad guy's dead. F him. I feel like we still could have had that beat and see Superman would at least understand, like, this is why I did this.
Yeah.
This was the choice that I made, because that's what that scene is about, is him finally choosing his past, Krypton versus Earth, you know, and he's choosing Earth, obviously.
I think to go along with this idea of choice, I think if you go all the way back to the beginning, where Jor-El steals the Codex. That's a sentence I just said, everybody. Patrick is right now on the ground, face down, drooling. So where he steals the codex, and part of the reason why he steals it is that he doesn't... I don't know how... what's the word? Canon this is to the... I don't care either. I just have to acknowledge that might have existed somewhere else. But he doesn't like that on Krypton, it's like this caste system. Like, before you're born, you're programmed into doing whatever. And so Jor-El and his wife decided, like, well, we're going to have our own child and, like, let him choose his own destiny. Which is, like, great. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so I wish they had played that up. I just feel like it's played there, and then it doesn't really get played out fully later on. Like, I wish in that moment where you know, if he acted when he defeats Zod, that was part of it. That it wasn't just the choice to, like, kill him, but the choice that's like, no, I've chosen to be this, and this is the role that I'm going to have, right? Zod does that whole, like, lengthy monologue of, like, this is who I am, and I'm the protector of whatever. And
right.
Said, okay, fine. But if there was some choice that Superman made, that Kal-El makes, that go, well, this is me choosing my destiny. I could have been anything, and this is the thing that I'm choosing to be. I just wish that, like, had paid off a little bit better, sure. I guess, is what I'm hoping for.
It's weird, too, because you had brought up, and I didn't even really think of it, his relationship with the Kents. And I did like the Kevin Costner stuff, and I liked Diane Lane. She was fine. My favorite line of hers was way late in the movie where Superman says, like, are you okay? And she says, oh, it's just stuff. It's such a great... Her delivery on it was really terrific. But you're right. We don't really see them instilling values in young Clark. And, again, part of that is, you know, the movie just doesn't have the running time to support a lot of that. So I felt like some of the blanks were being filled in by watching old episodes of Smallville, where I'm giving this movie credit for doing things that actually Smallville did that the movie's not doing. Because what really all this movie shows them instilling in him is a fear of humans' reactions.
Sure. Yeah.
And his interactions with them are never... You know, in one scene, he's telling Costner, you're not my dad. That's right before he dies. And then he comes to see Diane Lane. He says, I found him, my real dad. Like, F you guys. I know that there's still a connection there, and I'm shortchanging that beat. But there isn't really a sense of, I'm your son, and you are the people who made me Superman.
Sure.
The sense is that he was Superman from birth because of Kal-El.
Right, that he was inherently, as if he was inherently morally good all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, we don't get to see it.
And that's less interesting than, that it's really the Kents that sort of make him Superman.
Which is my favorite part of it.
What did you think of the scene in the church with the priest?
Oh God, that was rough. That was rough. Part of it, I remember watching it and thinking, well, why is he going there? There's no reason. Here's this random priest. Okay.
Because of bad writing.
Right. And well, because they wanted to get him up against the stained glass where it's Jesus.
Cow.
Because
take it easy.
Anybody who reads Superman obviously knows that Superman is in literary language is like he's a Christ figure. He's sacrificial. He's the last son of his whatever, right? But just it's just that I was,
and his wasn't a virgin birth, but it was the Krypton equivalent sort of a virgin birth,
right? And it's
a natural birth.
It's just super heavy-handed symbolism. And then
when he falls through the sky in the Jesus Christ pose,
right? And then he just leaves that scene. Just leaves church. Just like whatever. It's like maybe you got to take a leap of faith. It's like, no, that hasn't been talked about anywhere. Why?
That was a terrible scene.
It was a wasted 2 minutes.
It really was. It makes the things that Superman says make no sense. The priest talking to him, it makes no sense. And ultimately, he makes the decision to turn himself in. But is that based on what the priest said? I don't know. That to me stood out as a particularly bad scene. Made even worse by the heavy-handedness.
Yeah.
Of the symbolism with the stained glass. I mean, it really was beating you over the head with it.
I feel like if that conversation has to happen, then that shouldn't be happening between him and this stranger.
Right.
It should be happening between him and his father, or him and his mother, because that's, like, again, they're the moral conduit of his whatever.
Instead, he turns to a random person moral advice.
Who seems younger than he is.
Or, who like, steers maybe him in the right direction, which is fine, because he's a priest, and that's obviously what he's going to do, but you're absolutely right. To have it be a stranger gives the scene no weight.
Yeah. What do you think about the, and I don't remember the name of the character, but it's like General Zod's right hand, not man, but the girl. It's a woman. What do you think of that character?
I found her irritating.
I thought she was kind of awesome.
Really?
To be honest. Not okay. because of her character, but just because I thought she had some of the cooler fight sequences. Because the other, because she...
I couldn't tell any fight sequences apart from the other ones, honestly.
No, just because, like, she got to, I think why I liked her stuff was that you got to see a super, like, here's a person, like, a supercharged character, like, taking on, like, everybody else. And so it looked, it was just different. Okay. It's like, I don't know how, what the outcome of this is, as opposed to two supercharged characters. Like,
right.
I know this is just going to be people slugging in, and it doesn't matter. Right. So when she right. was fighting, it was just sort of interesting. Although it indirectly led to, well, no, it directly led to one of the things I hate the most in action movies, which is like the bring a gun to a laser fight situation.
Right.
I love it when humankind brings like their, this is my favorite, when infantry soldiers get out with like rifles. I'm like, no!
Right.
Stay in the tanks! What are you doing? And it's like, pew, 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 pew! And like bullets like fighting off her face mask. Right. This is so stupid. Why do you keep shooting? Stop shooting.
What are we to make of the destruction at the end of this movie? I mean, there are shots where the entire right. city is visibly leveled.
It's desert. And it's barren.
There's non-stop 9/11 imagery of planes crashing into buildings and buildings collapsing.
Oh, yeah.
And
then it's
running out of the way.
It's what's the editor's name?
Perry White.
Perry White. When Perry and like some of his other office, like they have to just go free the girl who's trapped under the rubble, which is directly 9/11 stuff.
Why are right. we? Why do we need this? I mean, I understand we are still processing it in so many ways, but the movies have become the 9/11 imagery has become so constant in movies that it doesn't feel like we're processing it anymore. It just feels like this weird shorthand for.
Right.
I don't think it added anything to the movie. I don't think it helped us understand what happened that day. I don't think it creates any greater sense of danger or fear in Man of Steel because yeah. It's not connected to any emotional stakes. It's all just computer buildings fall because a computer makes it possible.
Right.
And these guys have this fight because a computer makes it possible. And the whole, like, we have to rescue the intern, to me, smacked of, well, we need a female in distress and we don't right. want it to be Lois
sure.
because we're progressive enough to understand we can't just have the lead girl in the story be in distress all the time. Sometimes right. she'll fall out of the ship through the sky and right. Superman has to catch her. But,
yeah.
but maybe only once or twice.
Don't worry about it.
So let's pick a different female and put her in distress and need to be rescued.
Sure.
You know, it felt at times like they were trying to find random acts of human heroism.
Sure.
That's neat. That's an idea that,
right.
you know, that Superman is a symbol that inspires others to act as heroes, although there's no telling that they wouldn't
yeah.
have acted that way without a Superman.
Yeah.
So, again, there's sort of a half-formed idea there.
Right.
I found the last roughly hour of the movie, it's probably less, it's probably more like 45 minutes, tedious and kind yeah. of a drag to get through. And the thought of seeing this movie again, I almost don't want to because I don't want to sit through that 45-minute
right.
fight scene again.
Agree.
I like the stuff before that better.
Yeah.
You know?
I like the first part of the movie. The Krypton stuff I really liked.
Yeah, the Krypton stuff was cool and some of the,
like the halfway
Smallville
yeah.
interactions and some of the scenes with him and Lois, again, it doesn't make sense why they are where they are and
sure.
the relationship takes leaps, but I like the two of them interacting together. Very distracted by the product placement in the movie.
Yeah. Sears.
7-Eleven.
Yeah.
IHOP.
Yeah.
Nikon, her camera.
Oh, right.
The most egregious to me was Nokia when Zod takes over all the TVs, and at one point the girl says, it's even on my phone, and literally holds out the Nokia
She's
phone.
She's an intern.
Right, with the Nokia branding facing the camera. It really was, come on. Super distracting. I mean, that kind of stuff. I can usually overlook product placement,
sure,
but just
that
yanked me right out of the movie.
In your face.
I also thought it was weird the way that Zack Snyder chose to shoot a lot of the especially the Smallville stuff, where it's in these little one-shot sort of pieces. I'm trying to think of an example. It's like just a shot of a door closing, mm-hmm. or a pair of shoes or something. It felt like he saw Tree of Life and mm-hmm. said, "Oh, I want to do that for the Smallville sequences." Sure. But again, in Tree of Life, and I'm not the world's biggest Tree of Life fan, but it serves a very specific purpose, which right. is this idea of memory fragments yeah. that we remember these bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. That doesn't apply. I mean, that doesn't yeah. inform the aesthetic of Man of Steel, so it just feels like either a miscalculation or a reference to a movie that
right.
where it doesn't apply.
I think in Tree of Life, it's more about the specific nostalgia of childhood right. and basking in this sort of eternal golden hour,
right.
know, magic
right.
hour kind of thing. Whereas in this movie, it's much more, it's trying to show you the actual like childhood experience that
right.
he had. And so
right.
that's why it doesn't work as much. Because it's not like a flashback that he's having. It's like, no, we're actually moving in time
right.
to where this specific character was.
And I don't know for sure that he was, you know, copying Tree of Life, but
right.
it just felt that way. Yeah. I don't know. You know, the scene where, as a kid, he rescues the bus. It's fine. You know, I that scene is fine. I found myself wishing the movie felt the need to sort of rush its way from big beat to big beat. And
yeah.
so there's 2 seconds of them talking on the bus and him getting picked on, and then the bus goes underwater and he's got to rescue it. And
yeah.
okay, again, once again, it's paid off because he even rescues the bully, and that bully goes on to manage a very successful IHOP.
Yes, and talk to Lois Lane later.
Right.
And help him up off the ground when the other football kids were beating on him.
Right. right, which, I mean, that part is fine, but that's in the flashback that comes later than it should. But I just felt like, boy, if we would have seen, I don't know, in that moment, I wanted to connect with somebody emotionally. I wanted yeah. a conversation between Clark and who it's revealed is Lana Lang
yeah.
On the bus, like talking to each other and interacting so that there's some sort of emotional connection before we get the big action beat. And the
yeah.
movie doesn't seem concerned with that. It just has to sort of jump from beat to beat.
Right.
Without filling in some of those gaps, I felt like.
And then Nolan and Snyder are both guys with a track record of not necessarily being the best at being able to create emotional connection
right.
between characters or between
right.
the audience and the character either. So.
Right. And to me, Zack Snyder, you know, one of his appeals has always been, while he's not great at creating emotion, he is good at a visceral experience.
Sure.
And I feel he even lost it here, except for isolated moments. There are certainly moments where Superman takes flight that feel great.
Yeah.
Some uses of his powers that are great. There's a shot that was in so many of the trailers and possibly even the first image that was ever released where Superman gets hurled back through a building and slams into a bank vault and just
yeah.
dents the bank vault and then stands back up. And there's just one little isolated moment where we really feel the power of Superman because we see this impact.
Mm-hmm.
Had there been fewer of those, if the bank vault was sort of one of five instead of one of 500,
yeah.
it would have so much more impact.
Mm-hmm.
But it all becomes white noise of destruction,
yeah.
you know, which
it's
is
just
also the name of my metal band.
Oh, mine was going to be Broken Glass of the World Engine.
The World Engine.
What kind of sucks at the end with the World Engine thing is that I don't even understand the difficulty of what it is that he's doing. Like, he's trying to fly up the beam of the World Engine or something, and he's trying to smash the thing apart or whatever it is that he's
right.
trying to
do. He has to turn off.
I have
off
no
the,
idea what he's trying
to do.
But
it's the same thing that they had to do in Avengers. It's the same thing they had to do in the 2009 Star Trek. It's like, we have to shut off that machine
right.
so we can defeat the bad guy over here.
Yeah.
And it's...
I don't even understand how hard... If, like, the difficult... I don't understand the difficulty of the task either. I'm not saying it's easy. Right. I'm just saying, like, I...
Well, it looked hard
because... He seems to be straining.
It looked hard because all those Matrix robots were circling. the weird yes. worm things kept trying to grab him.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know.
It was a little too...
Yeah, I totally agree with you with the final set piece being a little... I was tired. Which kind of makes me worried. I guess we should talk about... and two more thoughts.
Yeah.
One is that it makes me look back at the Bryan Singer mm-hmm. Superman Returns mm-hmm. and think like, oh, well, then why do people poop on that movie a little bit? Because, like, in my memory, like, I just, it's like, well, this wasn't as, I don't remember as having as many, like, qualms as we just kind of went over for this movie. I'm like, well, why do people not like the Superman Returns one? I don't know. Anyway.
I think Superman Returns. If my memory is correct, it's been a while since I've seen
sure.
it. I think this is a better movie than Superman Returns, okay. which is crazy. This movie almost seems to be made in reaction to Superman Returns, because Superman Returns comes out, and everybody's big complaint is he never throws a punch. Like,
yeah.
there's no action. And so Zack Snyder says, I'll okay. make a Superman movie where he only throws punches
right.
and where it's only action.
Yeah, I'm kind of want to go back and see Superman Returns to yeah. see like where it stacks up a little bit.
Yeah.
My other thought is the sequel's already, I yep. think, in the like they're already planning it.
Yeah.
And it makes me a little bit worried about... like, I understand that, okay, again, we've got these five other movies where Superman's doing things, and so it's a little bit hard to, like, you just got to get more creative in terms of, like, showing what he can do, mm-hmm. or, like, whatever, all that other kind of stuff. But it just makes me worried for the sequel that they're just going to go with more of this, like, smash and grab, like, unelegant, like, whatever. I just want him to be, because I feel like Superman's not just this bruising, like, the Hulk, I understand, if you're making a Hulk movie, Hulk smashes stuff, that's right. fine. But, like, that's not Superman.
Right.
Like, Superman is, like, a person, like, a guy with a sense of morality, who with, like, a sense of delicacy, a sense of, like, fragility, gets it. And I'm just worried that in the sequel, it's just going to be, like, they'll be like, let's just make it bigger!
And that is, you know? That is sort of the textbook treatment of what to do with sequels. Maybe the fact that Clark Kent theoretically will figure into the proceedings more will help temper some of that. If sure. we could spend some time with Clark Kent, and to me that means more scenes between him and Lois Lane, and I'm on board for that. I'm fascinated too, because I've read more than one review after I saw the movie, then I tried to catch up with some reviews, and more than one said, this movie is okay, it does more right than it does wrong. What it does really well is get us in a good place for the sequel. And I just don't understand right. how it's this not, became the like way a, that like we approach... Positive. Yeah, this is how we approach movies. Like, well, they kind of whiffed it, but the next one's going to be good. No, 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 this one has to be good. And then if they make another one, great, more of a good thing. But don't tell me, like... Good try, you'll get them next time
right.
as a reason why I should give this movie a pass. Yeah. Movies aren't TV shows. We can't just mm-hmm. watch an episode and think, not great, but I'll give it another try next week. Like, I don't know. I don't understand. Again, it goes back to this whole sequel franchise
right.
mentality. But it concerns me. I know why studios do it. It concerns me to see... audiences and even critics in this instance becoming complicit in that
right.
to the extent that they're giving this one a pass because, you know, now the next one will be good.
Right, right.
And by the way, we all said that about Star Trek 2009, right? And look how that worked out. I mean, it's the exact same thing. It doesn't all work, but the pieces are there. Next one's going to be good.
Yeah. Just go see Mud, everybody.
Apparently. Watch Holy Motors. Watch.
if you... can. Anyway, Witch Hunters. I still, but anyway, I definitely, it's a movie with a lot of problems, but I still enjoyed, there's like quite a few moments that I still enjoyed yeah. watching it and like having the cinematic experience and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think our reaction combined, I think is pretty indicative of like where this kind of movie is. It's like, this might be a coin flip, but yeah, happy summer.
Happy summer.
Happy summer.
This was it, I think. This was the peak, so right, let's see where it goes from here.
It's June. What's the date today?
The 15th.
Yeah, it's all downhill, guys. Sorry.
Yikes.
No. There's still other things coming out.
Yeah, well, thanks for listening, everybody. Sorry if that was kind of a depressing experience. I liked parts of it. I liked things about it. I don't think it's a bad movie. I don't know how much I liked it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fine. No. That's a proper mixed reaction to it.
Yeah, it's definitely a mixed movie. We'll be back next week with something that probably isn't a new release, so we'll talk about something old.
Sounds good.
In the meantime, just watch everything old, and then you'll for sure have seen whatever movie we talk about.
Yeah, and then watch a really strange French movie.
Yeah.
That's fine, too.
Bye, guys.
See ya.